this is my happy time. Even though a friend of mine just got a puppy and she FaceTimed me with the puppy, this is still better than the puppy, but the puppy was pretty cool.
Yeah, I don't think we can outdo a puppy, but we'll do it.
Oh my God. We love you, Eve. Great.
You know I'm recording because that's going to end up as a clip.
That is going to be a cold open. I can feel it.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to Gen X Stories, a podcast about how the so-called lost generation found itself. We are your hosts, Eve, Courtney, Lori, and Chris. On today's episode, we're talking about TV, shows we were raised on, what we liked, what we didn't like, and what we're binging now, unless we're still binging the same shit, which I am. On with the show. Hi, guys.
Hi, Eve. Hi, ladies.
I didn't watch a whole lot of TV, I don't think, as a kid. I know.
Was this a badge of pride or was it a household rule?
This went along with no jeans.
I was on the computer a lot. So when we were prepping for this episode, I started looking at shows and making a list. And there were some of them on there that I actually did watch. Do you guys have like a favorite show as a kid?
Saturday Night Special.
What was that?
Oh my gosh, you had Love Boat and Fantasy Island.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
The plane.
Right?
I knew that. But that was your Saturday night, right? There was a lineup.
Yeah. That was like date night for my parents. So.
Oh, wait.
I was allowed to watch TV later than normal. So I was, those are my shows.
So it was date night because they went out and you had a babysitter?
Yeah. So I was allowed to watch those shows.
Did they know you were watching those shows?
Yeah. They were approved. Oh, okay. They were approved. They're like, oh, we're going to go out. Here's some Chef Boyardee and watch these two shows.
Here's a can of beefaroni. Go nuts.
Exactly.
Don't burn the house down.
That's when we're little. That's like when you're in elementary school.
Yeah.
How old were we?
Teenagers are different. Teenagers, there was other stuff going on.
What were you watching, Chris?
As a kid? Gosh. I don't know if you remember a show called Emergency, which was on ABC, and it was about Los Angeles paramedics. Yep. Randolph Mantooth and God, I forget the other guy's name. John Gage and Roy DeSoto were the duo, the team. And it was very formulaic in that they have to go out and there's a guy on a bike who fell off a cliff. Now we got to go and save him. And then they take him to Rampart, which is the hospital. And they call in and they give him an IV with D5W. I don't know what that meant, but it seemed cool. Ringer's lactate. That they were always doing Ringer's lactate with D5W. I don't know what that means.
What the fuck is that?
I don't know. But it
you
was
could be on
cool.
ER or you could be on Grey's Anatomy now.
I was going to say, it sounds like ER. It sounds like the predecessor of ER.
But they always did the same thing. Yeah, kind of. But they always it was always the same. And Bobby, was it Bobby Short or somebody like that who was one of the doctors? It was very 70s. The nurses still wore the white hats and that kind of stuff. Yeah. So it's very dated. But as a young boy, it was kind of cool because you were like, oh, firemen saving kids and dogs and all those kinds of things. So it was fun. Yeah.
Did you watch Chips too?
Chips, come on.
Well, Chips was very similar, except I found it was just kind of annoying. There was a lot of cars that just magically leapt into the air that you really couldn't.
And your problem is?
Well, and they were driven by hot guys.
I didn't really notice that. Okay. But
I was seared in my memory is an image of this very tame Eric Estrada. Cracking open his fridge, putting an egg in a glass, and drinking it raw. I mean, that has scarred me since my childhood. I was like, oh my God, this is the grossest thing ever.
Because it was boy thing.
Because very protein. It was just, I'm getting my protein.
Right. I'm sure he took that from Rocky because I always remember that every couple of episodes, they were always like glomming on to like the new fad and it was all California based. Do you remember that? Like it'd be like, oh, the gang's at the BMX bike race. What? You know, and then they're down at the skate park and then they're on the Hobie Craft and then they're doing jet skis and it just and then
smart showrunner.
Yeah. And then a couple of cars flip over. It was the same retread with nothing happening.
But then you're talking about cars. Dukes of Hazzard was about cars, right?
No,
I thought that was about Daisy Duke's shorts.
Yeah.
I
didn't look at the right for the boys. Did you look at the shorts, Chris? The Daisy
Dukes? I'm not going to say that question.
I think it's inevitable because they were on the screen.
If a plane crashes in front of you, you're going to notice that. Yeah. I'm just going to say that. Yeah. So
I never understood why they didn't fix the doors. Like, seriously,
they jumped into.
I thought someone was never going to have children again jumping in that car and hit the stick shift.
I think it was supposed to be after like the stock cars that they were racing at the time. That's why the doors were welded shut.
There was a plot.
I was very practical even as a kid.
Yeah.
Apparently.
What were some of your shows, Lori?
I'm not even going to admit one of my shows when I was.
Yes,
now, how young are we talking about?
Whatever age you want.
Talked about this.
The more embarrassing,
already
the better.
Talked about, Donnie and Marie when I was little.
Yes, baby. Oh my God. Remember when they switched?
Yes.
Where she did Rock and Roll and Heated Country?
Favorite
episode. Scandal.
favorite episode.
Donny and Marie.
They had an ice skating rink, didn't they, too? On a soundstage?
They did it all, Chris.
No, but I think we talked about this in one of the episodes where I said my room was purple.
Crush. We talked about the Crush episode because you love Donny and you wanted to get rid of Marie.
Right.
Wow.
They both went on Dancing with the Stars. Hello.
So that's like a variety show versus like a sitcom.
Right.
Was there a difference for you? Like, did you go watch Laugh-In and all those things?
Well, I mean,
like
Laugh-In, if you remember Laugh-In, we were really young.
Really young.
When that came out.
Really young.
So any kind of memories I have of that, where I just remember it was sort of in the zeitgeist of American culture at the time. I remember seeing reruns, but we had a station in Chicago, which is still there, called WGN. So they would play a lot of the older retread kind of things. So it's like where you could see The Twilight Zone and Andy Griffith and all those other really good shows, and some also really dopey shows. Yeah, Leave It to Beaver was on there, and like My Three Sons. See, Chip, Ernie, and that other guy.
I like That Girl with Marlo Thomas.
That Girl.
We talked about the crush from Mary Tyler Moore. So you watched that.
Yeah, but That Girl was good.
Yeah.
They also had something, I don't know if you remember this, it was an early sitcom called Hazel, which was the...
Hazel, right? She was the maid from...
She was the maid, yeah.
From which
from
show?
What?
She was the maid
Jefferson?
From one of the...
This was early. This
Was
like mid-60s, Hazel. It was all... She was like a maid.
She was a maid in one of the other big shows. I can't remember.
Was it Beaver?
And she got a spinoff.
Yeah.
Lori's looking it up.
You know. Family maid.
Baxter.
There you go.
Who were the Baxters?
I don't know. It was before my time. Then we had a couple of UFA, you know what I mean?
UFO.
UFO stations that would also play... some of these really obscure kind of things that were, because they were cheap. You could buy the rights for those that are cheap. They'd take up airtime and you'd be like, oh, you know, I mean, things like Green Acres and Petticoat Junction.
Green Acres. I forgot about Green Acres.
Green Acres.
Yeah.
Green so there was Acres. So, Stormy. Zsa Gabor. Was it Zsa Zsa or the sister?
Zsa Zsa.
She played like the city girl who goes to the country.
Yeah, and Eddie Albert. Yep.
Yeah, Albert. Yep.
There were Gabors on the Love Boat, right?
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody was on the Love Boat, people. just face up, face back. Facts. It was awesome.
I don't know if you guys remember, too, during the 70s, it was kind of the golden age. It goes in cycles. They had them in the 50s, but there were also a whole bunch during the daytime of game shows as well. And sometimes primetime and things
like
that.
Which they've all now remade for primetime now.
Like what? What are they remade?
No Emmys.
Yeah, match like that game. They got Card match Sharks. Game. You got Match Game.
Match Game with Alec Baldwin.
Match
now.
Game.
They did. What was the
and
one?
It was Gene Rayburn in the past.
The Squares.
Hollywood Squares. I can't stand Paul Lynde.
The triangle one. Pyramid.
Oh, Pyramid. Yes.
That was Dick Clark, I think, hosted that one too.
Yes.
Is that the $100,000 pyramid thing?
It was the $64,000 pyramid back then.
Okay. Inflation is.
It was originally $64,000 and now it's like 100 something thousand. Is that true?
No, I was making.
Jesus, I have to look that up now. I didn't even go into game shows. Like my list was just TV shows.
Okay, right. But you totally missed like Bewitched.
Oh, yeah, totally. Bewitched.
Oh, I love Bewitched.
Exactly. I Dream of Jeannie.
$10,000 pyramid. It wasn't even $64,000.
It was the $64,000 question.
It was $10,000 pyramid. Okay, that's funny.
I love Dick Clark.
Here's a little thing. Dick Clark. He's
you're
no
gonna have a good
us.
One, huh?
Well, no, he was a very prolific producer as well. I don't, you know,
right.
He did
Dick
a
Clark
lot
Productions.
Of
Productions. I remember that
huge Dick Clark Productions. He was also notoriously cheap, and his production managers used to cut the donuts and bagels in half on a craft service, so people would take a full one. True story. Yeah, I worked on a couple of his shows.
But let's be honest, you don't really want a full donut. Like I get it.
Yes.
Half
you
donut.
Want the choice
like, because
you, want
you can
choice.
Have two different kinds. You can have two different kinds of bagels. Like I get it.
It wasn't done out of that. That was not the intention.
Chris never got a full bagel through Dick Clark. That sucks. Other shows. We talked about Cars earlier. Knight Rider.
Yes.
I remember Knight Rider. Do you remember the music?
Remembers everything.
That's super impressive.
I remember the car better than I remember Hasselhoff, though. Is that wrong?
Kit,
no,
right?
That's fine.
Kit. Yeah. That's
Kit.
Right.
Kit was cooler. Kit was cooler than the Hoff
talking
was.
Car. Little did we know we would have talking cars.
I had a sort of a soft spot for all of those 70s Quinn Martin productions, you know, where they'd be act one, act two, act three. You had like, I don't know if it's Columbo, but you had like Cannon,
Columbo.
Columbo was great. Oh. And Kojak and those.
Yes.
You know. One more thing. Yeah, exactly. Walking out the door.
Columbo was a great character. Just fantastic. Yeah. And I heard something on NPR. It was kind of serendipitous that it was originally developed as a 2-hour special. It's back when they used to do, I don't know if everybody remember this, but they used to do television movies, like the ABC television movie of the week or whatever. And they'd pick television stars and fading movie stars, and usually a very ridiculous premise. And they'd always be sort of like send-ups or takeoffs of popular movies, like the Airplane movie. Not Airplane the movie, but like Airport. That's movie of the week. And some of them were really good. And then you had the after-school specials.
The More You Know.
Exactly.
More You Know started with after-school special?
Yeah, they had with the More You Know was going on when we were all in elementary school. They've been doing that since the 70s.
I just remember after-school specials for sure. I do too. That was like,
they'd have this crazy little guy like teach you how to make healthy snacks. It was in this weird sort of like 60s style cartoony. And I remember him teaching you like, you could pour lemonade into a ice tray, put toothpicks in it, and you get it as an ice, like a little ice.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
So I tried it many times.
I was going to say, did you?
And all my toothpicks came out like at right angles.
But you start to think about, they don't do this as much anymore, which is sort of like a new thing in television now with, or not even streaming, but all the movies and original content. But this was a real thing, and also miniseries.
Right. Mm. Thornbirds. I remember Thornbirds as a miniseries.
Roots was the big Holocaust, seminal, which I think was on NBC. Really powerful, wonderful things.
That, or even that.
And The Day After. Do you guys remember that?
I'm traumatized by The Day After.
84 or something, 82.
Day After was about if the nuclear war had hit the United States. What would happen?
Yep. I don't remember that one.
Like, also, don't forget, there was on Sunday nights, you had Wild Kingdom Disney.
Yeah.
Disney showed a movie or something. Wonderful World of Disney and Wild Kingdom, remember?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And did anyone watch Leonard Nimoy, who played Spock in Star Trek? He was the narrator host for In Search Of.
Yes, I loved In Search Of.
Oh my God, wasn't that great?
Bigfoot.
Right. But he was, it was so
and
great.
The Bermuda Triangle. It was all the books.
That creepy music.
Yeah. But there was all the things that, like, as a young boy, I was like, if we're going to the library, we're getting books on tornadoes, UFOs, the Bermuda Triangle. They were very sort of dog-eared copies because it was just the topic of conversation for eight-year-olds in my town. So when those things came on, it was fantastic. So
what about Nessie? Didn't they do it In Search Of with the Loch Ness
Monster? Sure, yeah. Of course.
Yeah. I remember seeing that little weird photo of the head.
It's the same photo they still use today.
Yep.
He's not real.
But Twilight Zone.
Oh
my gosh. Still brilliant.
Rod Steiger, yeah.
They scared the crap out of me, I gotta be honest. I mean, even today, I'm like, oh, that's creepy. And what's interesting about when we're growing up is that the TV shows that were geared for time of day, like there was the Muppets.
The Muppets.
And the Muppets were both at this level of being a kid and watching it, but it had a lot of double meanings, double entendres, especially with the guys in the balcony,
say that
right?
Again. Say that again.
Double entendres.
Come on, say it.
Double entendre. But the point being that you as a child could watch it with your parents and your parents would get another layer of meaning out of this. And Disney's now like capitalized on this brilliantly with all their movies. But at the time it was nice because you're like, wow, mom and dad are watching a kid show with me and it was family viewing.
Did you see Sesame Street?
I watched Sesame Street as a young child. Yeah.
Did you have a favorite character on Sesame Street?
Oh, it's got to be Ernie.
I love Ernie. Ernie's just but I love Big Bird.
Snuffleupagus. Why didn't you like Snuffleupagus, Lauren?
I didn't say it. It said he wasn't an original.
Oh. So who were the originals? It was Ernie, Bert,
Oscar. I think. I think Oscar was actually like a different color at the beginning too.
Was he?
Grover. Big Bird.
Wait, what color
wasn't
was Oscar?
Wasn't Kermit in the original?
Was originally on there. Yep.
Yeah.
Piggy wasn't, right? Piggy wasn't in the original.
She was never on Sesame Street.
She was on The Muppet Show. That's where it gets fuzzy, too, because there were different characters, and there still are. Because I think Sesame Street's still going on. They just actually brought it back, or they extended it or something.
Yeah, it's interesting because I learned how to count. Was it 12 in Spanish?
Yeah, sure.
You know?
Ah, from The Count? Did you learn?
Not from The Count, but they would have these like little mini cartoon segments that would have
learning things versus they were always lessons.
They stuck with you, man. They were
always
brilliant educators behind all of it.
I don't know if anybody realizes this, but I think it was the first season of Saturday Night Live, Jim Henson actually was doing puppet stuff for Saturday Night Live.
No.
It wasn't working with the format, and he ended up not doing that, and then following shortly afterwards ended up developing and doing the Muppet Show. So
I didn't know that.
But also going back to what Courtney was saying, we start talking about Saturday morning cartoons and how awesome those were, and the Schoolhouse Rock things that were in between there, you know, where you're learning stuff, which are great songs still.
I have Schoolhouse Rock on DVD.
Nice.
Do you still listen to it?
I haven't, but I need it. I had to have it.
Have you seen, there's a meme recently that has the bill on Capitol Hill and it says, there's no song for this shit.
There's no song for this.
Right. Did you have to go to bed by a certain time or were you like sneaking downstairs to watch?
It was a weekend thing.
Yeah.
Wait, so there was shows you could watch on the weekend and shows you could watch during the week.
Stay up later on the weekend. Yeah.
I don't remember any of that. I think I blocked all that shit out.
I was in bed so early that I still go to bed early.
Oh, wow.
I had to be in bed by like 8 o'clock when
it was like Donnie and it was Donnie and Marie and the.
It was still light out then.
I need sleep. My parents knew that. And then in high school.
Did that change?
A little bit, because I played sports all through high school. So I was exhausted by the time I got home. And you come in, you have a shower, you have something to eat, you watch a little TV, and I'm in bed by 9, 10 o'clock. But it was different.
True. There was an advantage if you lived in the central or mountain time zones as well. Because
you got it late.
Prime time was 7 to 10. It wasn't like the difference between 10 and 11 when you're 11 years old is quite a lot. So it'd be like you can watch the first couple of minutes of the local news, or if we had a second television at some point, go watch a rerun of MASH and then go to bed. That kind of thing. You're in bed by 10:30.
Do you remember when the television program was over, it would go to...
Yeah.
And then the national anthem with the flag. And then it would go to Fuzz.
We had three channels, right? You remember, you grew up with the three channels, or was there like
four?
Yeah, I mean, it was like three main networks.
ABC, and then there were
sort of.
You had like local news and stuff.
Exactly. And we had WGN, and then we had a PBS station, and then a couple of smaller other stations that would play like import things from Japan. Just trippy and fun and weird.
So that's network TV. What changed in your viewing habits when cable started coming in?
Oh my gosh. Cable was so exciting because you could get HBO. It was like, oh my gosh, we get a family movie night with like cool movies. That was kind of fun.
But then you watch the like three movies they had that month and then you're like, you want to watch boxing? No. we're done. Their comedy specials were good too. HBO was really good about that kind of stuff. And actually even some of the earlier local superstations started doing original programming.
And then there were all the infomercials.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Like the guy who did the spray paint on the bald guy's head.
Mm-hmm. I love him.
And then he went on to do like the Ronco chicken cooker, or like the oven that's on your, you know, you plug in, it's on your countertop or something. Like there are all these crazy, remember the Ginzu knife that cut through the can, and then it would cut the tomato.
What other shows?
You got your 80s, really. I think when drama solidified, you think about Hell Street Blues. There's soaps too, but the soaps were a little, for me personally, they weren't my thing. The Dallas and stuff, I understood. And Falcon Crest and all the other
Dynasty
and those kinds of things.
A lot of shoulder pads and a lot of hairspray.
But there were two fantastic shows, Hill Street Blues and St. Elsewhere.
That started the genre, really.
Yeah, it was, and they were soap opera-y, but they were really gritty and interesting, well acted. I mean, if you think about St. Elsewhere, you had Denzel Washington was on.
Oh, God, really?
Yeah,
that's right.
He was on St. Elsewhere. And it was just a great ensemble, and the whole idea of an ensemble and imperfect characters, I think, sort of led to the things that you saw further on with like The Sopranos and even into the 90s, like Northern Exposure, which is a terrific show. I have no idea why it's not on a streaming service right now, because it's really kind of timeless, because everything was very sort of esoteric and it's a weird little town. And there's a lot of philosophy in it. There's religion. If you guys haven't seen it, I can't recommend it enough. And Janine Turner is just dreamy as hell.
Even though she's a nut job now.
Delightful, great cast. Again, an ensemble piece. So every episode, you sort of drift in and out.
And LA Law
came after that. Yeah.
I liked LA Law.
We're forgetting like the number one shows that were on at the time, like Happy Days and Laverne and Shirley. Those were like big shows at the time.
Big time. Yeah. Big time.
As a kid, that was just like harmless, silly fun. There was no great leap forward intellectually with some of the shows, but it was like popcorn for your brain. Just like put it down. It's the same show that you saw last week. The Fonz is going to do something. Potsy and Malf are going to do something dumb. And then everybody's going to learn something at the end.
What I think is funny is these kind of shows harken back to a different, I mean, not Laverne and Shirley, but Happy Days harken back to the 50s, this idealization of childhood and youth and family. Yeah. I'm curious today, what are the shows harkening back to? I think a lot of the shows are harkening back to the 80s.
They are.
But not necessarily with the fond nostalgia.
No,
it's got Gen Z millennial twist, like Stranger Things.
Yeah.
And the Goldbergs, I think, is another one I've only seen. I don't watch a lot of it.
The Goldbergs is very spot on.
Sort of tongue in cheek. Yeah.
For sure.
But I mean, Wonder Years did that.
Yeah.
It was in the 90s too. Yeah. And one of the things that's interesting is Happy Days and Laverne and Shirley. That was sort of, like you said, an idealized kind of thing, Courtney. It was sort of a remembrance of the way things never were.
Exactly.
Exactly. Idealized like that.
For sure.
Exactly.
Well, we would never know because we didn't grow up in the 50s.
You knew. I mean,
but your parents are looking over your shoulder and like, oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's why Grease came out of Grease. And
the biggest number one show that's totally in revival and rewatched endlessly now is Friends. Okay. That was when we were in our 20s for sure. But Friends is a totally idealized time capsule of people living in apartments they can't afford.
Sure.
Never working, yet still having enough money to go do adventures. And they had plenty of time to hang out at the coffee shop and talk to one another. And your friends never left. You always lived across the hall from them. And you never had to deal with major issues that couldn't be resolved in 30 minutes. And there were no cell phones. So I think it feels like a much simpler time.
A lot of those episodes wouldn't be able to happen anymore. Like, I just call them and everything's resolved.
Right. Or I'll just drop a text and suddenly it's over. Yep. Yeah. You don't need 30 minutes.
I didn't leave anything on his answering machine, so I don't need to break into his apartment and steal the tape. It's like,
That's true. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about scenarios in TV shows that we grew up with that now are absolutely moot.
Answering machine gaffe. Yeah.
That trope is gone forever.
For sure. You
know? Absolutely.
Or waiting for a call, like waiting at home for a call.
Remember when VCRs came in and you could tape things? Otherwise, if you weren't there at 8 o'clock on Friday night, you missed that shit.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was appointment TV.
When I was growing up, probably in my early high school, junior high years, that was like absolutely important because we could tape David Letterman and we could tape SCTV.
Just everybody, all the crates came from there.
Just, it was such a weirdly demented show. And it was before Kids in the Hall, but same kind of thing where it was these sort of little vignettes, but the premise about this, it was a television station where they had all these really weird characters. And it was brilliant because they didn't think anybody was watching.
What's funny about that too is that those are late night shows and they're on at late night because younger kids weren't expected to watch them. But with the VCR, we could tape everything that we weren't supposed to see and we could watch it later. So, I mean, it really opened up a world to us as part of our growing up.
You had the TV guide and you'd say, oh my God, that's going to happen at 11 o'clock and I can't stay up for that. And then when the VCR came in, it's like, well, my parents don't know how to program this thing, so I'm just going to tape shit.
You just hit record at 7 and just go back and delete what you want.
Hey Gen Xers, we're just taking a little break in our middle of our episode to share a promo from another great Gen X podcast that you ought to listen to. Take it away, Amy.
My name is Amy, a proud Gen Xer born in 1977, and together with my older sister Jenny, I host a podcast called Gen X This Is Why. Each week, we look back at the sometimes bizarre and often scarring media from our shared Gen X childhood. And we attempt to figure out, Gen X, this is why.
This is why I hate camping and any other activity that involves sleeping, peeing, or bathing without walls and plumbing.
This is why our entire generation was terrified of lasers.
This is why I thought that severe depression was a normal part of adolescence.
This is why I'm glad I have daughters.
This is why I'm not monogamous.
Our current weekly series is Little House on the Prairie, and we also cover some of our favorite movies, like Top Gun, Dirty Dancing, Heathers, Halloween, and more. Gen X This Is Why is part snark, part nostalgia, and a whole lot of sibling rivalry.
I didn't realize that you were pretending to not be smart. I think that's interesting. You were good at it. I mean, you nailed it. Like, that was an Oscar award-winning performance.
Find us on any podcast app or visit our website at genxthisiswhy.com. That's Gen X This Is Why. Letter X, spell out the Y.
And we're back. Did you ever watch shows that you weren't allowed to watch? Because there were certain stations that had the it was blurred out.
They had the line in the center. The whoop, whoop.
Right, right. And then that shit was on. And I'm kind of like, oh, that could be interesting. What's that? And I'd stay up late and I'd
sneak. Naked people.
Right.
Those are the pay-per-view channels.
Right. So did anyone sneak and try and catch any of that shit?
Of course you're going to try to do that.
Did you get any?
They actually, in Chicago, they actually broadcasted that on some of the UHF stations.
Oh, UHF. Oh, Jesus.
And I have to remember this. It was called On TV and Spectravision. And you would get a box and they would have normal programming up until like 10 o'clock and then it would go into
adult programming
but movies and then adult programming kind of stuff. And if you're 14, you're going to be like trying to take this giant television and seeing, and maybe you're like, is that an ankle or a knee? I don't know. I might be seeing something.
And it may not matter because look, it's there. It's naked.
I think so. But it was, yeah, it was, I mean, I think it was an absolute rite of passage for anybody who lived in the Chicagoland area for that brief year and a half those subscriptions series were on. But the fact that they just broadcast it, like it couldn't have been that hard. And then people would sell the illegal boxes.
Yep.
I remember that.
The illegal cable boxes or the illegal scramblers.
Oh God, scramblers. That's right. So you could like unscramble this. You can actually see more than the ankle.
Yeah. You just meet some guy down, you lives in Cicero. He's knows a friend of a friend who works at the cable company and you got cable for free.
There are some adult themes in some of the shows that we saw as kids that I did not understand at the time.
Yeah. Like Hill Street Blues. Like I watched that with my parents and every now and then they'd be like, shut your eyes, Corny, shut your eyes.
Oh,
yeah, because
of course, I'd be like this, right? Like hand over the eyes with the big opening in between the fingers.
Yeah. Well, it was the big.
Why is Zipowitz naked?
Yeah. Well, that was NYPD Blue, which is
awesome. Sorry.
Yeah. Another good one.
Yeah.
But Hill Street Blues, they had Ferrillo and the prosecutor having like they would just meet like every once a week down in a hotel during lunchtime for I don't even think it was an affair. They just couldn't be together because they were on opposite sides. It was racy. And then there was also, do you guys remember Soap, which is a wonderful
show. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
There are a lot of really, really things that were very pointed towards adults and not for kids. And I think that was like 9 or 9:30 or something like in the Midwest. But a lot of the stuff here is you're a kid and my parents would just be laughing. And then a couple of times we're like, you can't watch this. Go away.
did you ask them if like Courtney, did you ask them why they had to do that? Or if you actually saw, did you come back later saying, I saw this stuff in a show. What is that? Or you just figured that shit out?
No. No, you call your girlfriend.
You immediately just felt the shame.
Yeah. And had to watch another after school special where they told That's you right. how bad you were.
Johnny doesn't live here anymore. I don't know like that.
Helen Hunt, you know, Oscar winner actress, was in a very famous after school special where she got high on cocaine or something and like jumped out of a window or did something crazy. Like it was a really dramatic part for her young career.
You could spend hours going down the rabbit hole looking at some of these older things. Like there was the boy in the plastic bubble.
Yes. John Travolta.
John Travolta. There was a lot of those sort of kind of wacky things where there, I don't know how they got greenlit.
There was Mork and Mindy.
Yeah, but that was, I mean,
Robin Williams. I dated an alien.
Yeah. But Robin Williams was delightful.
I'm not criticizing Robin Williams, but I say the premise of the show is just alien stupid. Comes down and moves in with Pam Dawber.
No.
Like Three's Company. Okay, but like an alien, I don't know. We're forgetting the show on which we talk and reference all the time.
What?
MacGyver.
I was a little old for that. That was sort of passing by the time, I think, because that was in
college.
Was that the 90s?
I don't know, chewing gum and a rubber band. Like,
yeah, I mean, it was certainly everybody was aware of it.
Yes.
What about Murphy Brown?
Oh.
Very clever.
That was huge. And that lingers. I mean, a lot of these shows like linger in our memory, I think, because there's a nostalgia, but there's a lot of shows that sort of stick there because they were the first, or they were the beginning of a conversation, like Moonlighting. I think a lot of people look at Moonlighting that way.
Very good. Yeah. That was actually very pre Northern Exposure, and Moonlighting was a little more, they broke the fourth wall a lot, go a little further kind of stuff. Maybe not as sweet as Northern Exposure, but still always that conflict of the, like the from Sam and Diane.
Cheers.
People hate each other and they love each other. Yeah.
I want to come back to Three's Company because I watched Three's Company and it has a laugh track and it's funny. But if you look at it now, it's kind of like, what the fuck's happening there? Wait a minute. That's
Jack's down at the Regal Beagle. I mean, that's what's happening.
No one explained that to me. The fact that there was the threesome, like it's a threesome, right? I mean,
it's in the same comic genre as Some Like It Hot or Bosom Buddies, you're cross dressing or you're claiming to be something you're not in order to have a good housing arrangement. So Jack Tripper was pretending to be gay so he could live with the two women and not be kicked out by Mr. Roper. I mean, that was the premise.
But he's not, and he's living with two women.
Right.
But then you get into social commentary too, because Jeffersons All in the Family. Those two had a serious edge to them that went right over my head as a kid.
You have All in the Family. It was all Norman Lear. So you had All in the Family, Jeffersons, Good Times.
Good Times.
Mm-hmm. And then a couple other ones that are not as well known. It was satire. And it was sort of pointing out very serious things in a very clever way. I remember reading something about Esther Rolle, who played in Good Times. She played the mom. And the gentleman who played his name was John. I can't remember his last name, but they felt that the soul of the show just basically lost the moment that Jimmy Walker's character became the dynamite guy.
That became
the lazy sort of things for the writers to do when they were trying to bring about, with a lot of humor and grace and really good characters, to bring about a little bit more poignant kind of messages. And it just sort of became more and more of a farce. John Amos.
John Amos? Oh my God, I forgot.
Yeah, he played the dad.
Forget that, because he's in West Wing. My guy in West Wing.
Yeah, he was also in Roots and just a really wonderful actor.
Well, and then that rolled into some goofier stuff that came later, like Melrose Place. Remember Melrose Place?
I loved Melrose Place.
Such a fun escape. I mean, Heather Locklear and Jack Warner, come on.
And Beverly Hills 90210. These were not your shows, Chris, right?
Nope.
Melrose Place was just fun because it came out at the time when you were at your first or second job and these were people trying to navigate it, and people were awful to one another. You could be like, oh my God, my boss is just like that. Right. But you know, there's also, I remember Family Ties.
Oh, Keaton, Michael Keaton.
Yeah. Yeah. And Family Ties was billed as this opportunity to show two 60s liberals raising kids in the 80s. But what happened is the kids took over the show. So the two actors playing the parents got a little bit sidelined, and we saw the character of Alex P. Keaton, the epitome of 1980s ambition and focus on making money and being unabashed about it. You wonder how much that influenced so many young people, and just maybe even a subtle way, that Alex P. Keaton is great. And he became the focus of the show, became a star, went on to do like movies like Secret of My Success and other things well beyond it. But in that sort of understanding of the socioeconomic issues of the time, that a show that was geared on children of the 60s, coming of age in the 80s, raising a kid like Alex P. Keaton, what does that say?
I always found that, we joke about this a lot, is those shows, there was at the end of it, there was always the group hug in the kitchen where everybody learned something.
Did that happen in y'all's families?
Never.
And everybody learned something?
Never.
Turmoils are not wrapped up in a half hour with a group hug in the kitchen, or a poignant little, this is, you know, the very special episode or whatever kind of thing.
Right.
I remember when I was a kid, I got in trouble at home. And I remember during a Brady Bunch episode, Pete had a bad time at school, and Mike Brady came in and said, Pete, I heard you had a little trouble today. You want to talk about it? And Pete just sort of, Dad, I just don't want to talk about it. And I'm like, well, that's a great idea. So I got in trouble too. And my dad came in and like, what the hell happened today? And I'm like, you know, Dad, I just don't want to talk about it. And I can tell you that my father's reaction was not the same as Mike Brady's. It was the complete opposite of that.
Too bad you're going to talk about it?
Yeah, just like his face immediately went red, and the little vein on his forehead stuck up and told me to get the hell out of bed.
And you're like, whoops, he didn't watch that episode.
Yeah. Like, I thought this was supposed to work. Come on. Yeah, TV, you failed me, you bastard.
Once again.
I know.
But did we learn? Is that what we learned from TV, though, growing up? I mean, did watching TV change how you grew up? Did, you know, things like getting in trouble with your father because you think he's Mike Brady? Facts of Life. I thought Facts of Life was always interesting because Mindy Cohen's character, I can't remember her name, was not the pretty girl. And there was something that I saw, and it's like, how is she going to handle Natalie.
Natalie. Yep.
Oh, that's right.
Natalie. I love Natalie because for me, I could look at Natalie and say, that's a person that I know. And what is Natalie going to do? Whatever Natalie does, I'm going to do. Maybe that's just me. Maybe I just sort of, I looked for something that was similar, and I looked for someone who I could get through life with, other than the Brady Bunch.
And particularly as things evolved in television, it wasn't as homogenized, and the characters, and I think the writing got a little bit better. And they, even though not always handled great, but they did tackle more serious issues. Even we're joking about those after school specials and the Helen Hunt things, and they brought it up. And I remember, what was that show? It was called Family in the 1970s.
Oh, yes, Family.
Oh, I remember Family.
And it was about a white family, and there was no people of color. But they started getting into things that were a little bit more serious. And it wasn't a sitcom by any stretch of the imagination, but I just thought that the writing became more interesting and more interesting. So I think it has to have affected you. And that it's the same reason why when you're reading a book, you build it in your imagination. If you have a character that you can identify with, you're going to certainly identify with that and use them, for lack of a better term, as a little bit of a extra role model.
For sure. I think as TV evolved while we were growing up, the people creating the shows, the showrunners, the writers, et cetera, and even the studios producing them understood that it was a relevant medium to teach. Mm-hmm. And we kind of made fun of the very special episode, but the very special episodes were relevant because they were showing something on television that hadn't been shown before, like an interracial kiss or health issues, whether it be pregnancy or eating disorders or homosexuality or whatever. And it offered, like you just said, Eve, it normalized it for you to see Natalie, right?
Yeah, totally.
And it normalizes it for people to have this broadcast into millions of homes and to see it as part of a recognized brand. And I think that's evolved over time to become actually very sophisticated as we've grown up with it. We don't necessarily maybe take it in the moment as being significant. For us, it's just informing us in a way that perhaps helps us to be more open-minded moving forward. I mean, I'm not trying to make TV this grand thing, but I do think there's been a lot of opportunities for it.
Just remember, they put Baywatch on too.
Hey, learned how to wax from that one. But
there were TV shows that you could actually watch, and I think you would actually lose brain cells watching them.
Sometimes you want to lose your brain cells. You just want to relax and just have fun or whatever. But I'm just saying, like, I think it's interesting that we grew up in our lifetime. We've seen it evolve in so many ways. Because it comes into your living rooms. Like TV actors are family members. TV actors are treated with such friendliness and people walk up to them all the time and talk to them because they are in their living room with them. Mm-hmm. Whereas like movie stars seemed like they were bigger than life and they seem so glamorous and different than us versus something in our living room. So, and now of course you can carry everything on your phone. So, you know, they can be with you in the bathroom. They can be with you on the subway or wherever you want to go.
Also, you make that point that if you're an actor, you go to television, that's it. You're there for the rest of your life. Unless you...
Yeah, there was a lot of, what's the word I'm looking for?
You wouldn't graduate. That wasn't a step.
There was a stigma to it.
Oh, really?
Which I think was so strange, but that's part of the business.
Unless it was like a Roots or when they did the Holocaust miniseries, which I think Meryl Streep was in. It had to have like some real weight behind it for people to do that. And now you see people doing it all the time because the work is fantastic. This is, as somebody who works in television, this is a huge golden age in terms of the amount of content that is being produced. Mm. Now, again...
Good content too.
Yeah. And it's a lot of it is really, really good. A lot of it is also shit. But you now have the choice, which is sometimes good. I mean, I miss a little bit of the, like, if you wanted to see something, you had to see it, or even at the very least, put a VCR in and you had to be in a place. I just find personally myself, sometimes I'm not a huge binge watcher, but if it's like a really rainy day out here in California, you're like, I'm not doing nothing. And you're like, you'll just lose 6 hours of your life watching something that you've watched twice before.
I just did it over the last.
You did?
4 days.
Would you watch, Lori?
Cobra Kai.
Oh, yes, Cobra Kai. But see, there's an 80s throwback to that. There's an aspect of it that it's that show is both, like, to Courtney's point, is geared at us and geared at our kids.
Sounds like you've seen it.
I saw all three seasons. I fucking binged that thing.
I've seen a little bit of it.
Have you seen it yet, Court?
No. I've been watching Bridgerton. Mock me all you will, but...
No, I haven't seen that.
I love an Empire waist dress.
But with Cobra Kai, it was sort of a walk down memory lane as well as, can this guy redeem himself? Don't get me wrong. There were a couple episodes I'm like, really?
Nick, I'm with you.
That can't always be good. It's hard to do content.
Yeah, but I was just, okay, I'm going to stick with it anyway. And I have enjoyed it so thoroughly. I just finished season 3 last night. I am ready for more.
You know what's weird about Cobra Kai? Because this comes back to a little bit when we were kids. I expected every episode to be an hour. It's not. It's 30 minutes.
No, it's 30 minutes.
And I was like, wait a minute, that must be just the first one. And then the next one was 30 minutes. I'm like, wait a minute, how can they do a half hour show these days?
It's a lot harder to write for a half hour show because it's compact, because it's a storyline going over period of time, and people are going to binge watch it. They're going to watch the one, and they're going to watch probably an hour and a half of it before they have to go and make dinner. So it gives the writers a little bit more freedom. And the other thing is, I don't think you have to tie everything up perfectly all the time. The Mandalorian, which is a really wonderful show.
Oh, so great.
And they tie things up every time, but it's more of like every season is a story kind of thing.
Yeah, so each episode is like a standalone type of Western or sci-fi.
Exactly.
Like there's a genre aspect to it. It's brilliantly done.
Is that the shift that we've seen then from back when we were kids and it was appointment TV to now the notion of you can see it anytime you want. You can see as much of it as you want.
As much as they have.
As much as they have. Is that, I think in some capacity, that's a good thing. Certainly during pandemic, streaming has gone through the freaking roof.
They want you to subscribe.
Yep.
And all the TV channels are doing it. There's Peacock now and all this other stuff. Mm-hmm. But basically you pay to watch it ad free. That's what you're doing. So back in the day when you had your VCR, you could fast forward for free.
Right. Now you have to pay to get it for free. I have Hulu. Hulu still has ads on it.
Yes.
The version
you,
I have Hulu.
I think you have to upgrade because I have ads too.
I upgraded for Handmaid's Tale and then I downgraded between seasons and I'll upgrade again when it comes out.
But your question about streaming is valid, Eve. I think it changes the whole dynamic of what you watch and how you watch it, because now how do you guarantee a critical mass and how do you become a cultural phenomenon? Because that was the great thing about appointment television. You talk about it at the water cooler the next day and everyone would talk about it in school the next day. And there was this like cultural zeitgeist that were happening organically. And now you have to have this critical mass happen through social media or through advertising or peers talking to you directly. So it's an entirely different word. I think someone who did it well though was when Shonda Rhimes had a show called Scandal. And the lead actress in there, Kerry Washington, was very smart. And she tweeted along with the cast as the show was happening. The live experience, when it was just on a regular time and day, and people were DVRing or TiVo, whatever they were doing, she made it so that you'd want to watch it live because they were tweeting insider scoop or commentary that you could follow along. And it's a very interesting way to use social media to promote a show and to get viewership up and also make it, the tweet became the water cooler moment.
There used to be an almost kind of schedule.
I miss the printed TV guide. Yeah, don't you guys?
There'd be sweeps, there'd be the doldrums of summer when not a lot of things out. Mm. And now it's like you can watch an entire show in one sitting, or hopefully not, because you're going to end
Cobra Kai.
Unfortunately, there's a lag period of a very long time sometimes before the next thing comes on. And
yes.
I think people are finding that, like, unless it's really exceptional. I mean, I love Stranger Things, but it took so damn long to get to the second and third season that I'm just like, I don't think I finished it, you know? And we had that in the past with like The Sopranos, but The Sopranos was so brilliant that you didn't care. And it was the only one that was doing it. I remember when David Chase, I think, said, I know they want it next year, but we're going to take more time off just to make sure that it's going to be really, really good.
Game of Thrones had the same issue.
Game of Thrones had the same issue.
And you're like, come on,
people. And you start to lose just like the thing.
Momentum.
And unless it's like a documentary or a documentary series, like The Tiger King, it really took
everybody. Never watched it.
Unless it's that kind of thing where it's a standalone and it's done. You're going to find that, like, what's going to fill the void in between the time that it takes a year, or if the writer producers get another deal and they start working on something else, and it's like a year and a half before this show that you love comes back. So it's going to be interesting to see how they maintain that, particularly with the cost of things, and justify the kind of time between when somebody is working on a million different things. I don't know. I find that if it's not there after a certain period of time, it's like a book that I forgot about on the
show. Right, he was injured.
And also don't forget, like, they haven't been in production regularly for almost a year now. And so that's screwing up a lot of this momentum, a lot of these series and what's going to happen.
Well, I can tell you they're back shooting, but it's stop start because of COVID these days, you know.
So they shoot for a while.
Yeah, not all of them are up and running.
Yeah. It depends on where you are, but there's a lot of scripts being banked, which is some of the interesting things that happened. I don't know if you guys remember when the writer strikes happened.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And that was the rebirth of game shows and reality television.
Reality TV took off.
I was going to bring up reality TV because the rise of reality TV, was the rise of that the fall of all the other stuff for you, or did you?
It completely changed the landscape.
Yeah. I was skeptical about it. I'm still skeptical about it, but do we think reality TV shows killed Hill Street Blues or whatever we liked then?
Well, I think changed some of the funding structure, because the reality shows were much cheaper to produce and had more bang for your buck, and whole production companies evolved or spun off it as a result of this. You know, I had a friend who worked pretty high up in ABC, and she was in scripted television versus unscripted television, and they were both fighting for the same kitty, the same monies, whereas before they weren't. It was all going to scripted. So it really did change the landscape.
Let's be honest, reality TV is scripted TV. I don't care.
Correct. It is. All the scenarios are produced.
If you look back in the history of television, there was sort of a series of cycles of these kinds of things. And it was like, oh, the game shows are coming back. Reality television certainly was something different, but there were things that were sort of in place before that. But yeah, it completely changed it. But one of the things that hasn't really come back was variety shows like Carol Burnett's and
Donny Marie.
And they tried a couple of times and it just never sort of found the traction.
Well, now it's a competition. The variety shows are now American Idol, The Voice, Dancing with the Stars, like all of that has
Top
become
Chef.
The variety show. Yeah, and food. The activities of food have changed everything as well. Shows, cooking competition shows.
She's 100% right, because you can bang out those shows. You can do an entire season. You load into a soundstage. You put it up. You shoot an episode every couple of days and you're done. So you're not paying that crew for 22 weeks that a normal season used to be. And the seasons are much shorter now. Sometimes it's like the British are great at it because they're like, we're just going to do six. Well, we want more. I don't care. We're just going to do six. Six and done. Hope you liked it. I'm on to the next thing.
Yeah, they'll call a season. They'll have like three in a year and they'll say it's season one, season two, season three. And I'm like, wait a minute. It's still the same year. I thought seasons were supposed to be, I mean, I know four seasons, blah, blah, blah. But you know what I mean?
But it's changed.
There is no seasons anymore.
I think that's an interesting thing because the pacing is, even Chris, you were talking about it, that there'd be a lag time in the summer. And those things are now different because if you stop watching something on TV, you're going to go stream something because The Queen's Gambit just came out. And who gives a shit when sweeps are on ABC because you're not watching in real time anyhow.
Do they have sweeps anymore?
They do, yeah, because it sets the rate for advertisers. Budget. But interestingly enough, during the summer, a lot of the times in the past, that's where they would try things out. Seinfeld came out of that. There was a gentleman that I knew, Rick Ludwin, who they had a Bob Hope special. He said, well, I'm going to take some of the money from Bob Hope special and let you do a couple of these. And Seinfeld got made. Hmm. And NBC was like, I don't get it. And he's like, no, just stick with it. I think Northern Exposure was a summer release. If you go back and there's a lot of those other things that we either produced and it didn't really fit into the schedule, we're just going to plug it in and see if it gets any traction.
But so that's different now. So what's the pacing now?
It drives me crazy.
Okay, because why? Because it's
because it's not set. So like you have a show that you follow. It used to be that the shows would premiere after Labor Day. And everyone would have their premiere around the same week or two. And then you could get into your show and there'd be a break over the winter, but they would come back. But now, like sometimes they don't start till October, November, and then they only go through the new year and then they're off for 3 months. Like it's not, you're not missing 1 or 2 weeks in between. You're missing sometimes weeks or months.
Or a year.
In between the single season. Like even the single season is broken up so much now that you're like, wait a minute, wait, what episode did I see? I don't even remember this character. What's going on? And like Chris was saying earlier, like you lose that momentum when you can binge watch everything. But I think TV's already made some choices that don't allow you to sustain the momentum that you were sort of used to. And I'm not trying to sound like, you know, grumpy about it. I just think it's really changed everyone's relationship with TV.
I agree with you. I remember back in the day when there were cliffhangers. We don't have cliffhangers anymore because, well, you might at the end of a season, but you've already probably planned how you're going to watch that season because the next one's come out already. So you can binge two of them.
I mean, the classic is Who Shot JR?
Oh,
yeah.
If you watched, I don't know if it was a cliffhanger, but all the people watched soap operas at General Hospital. Was it Luke and Laura?
Luke and Laura.
But Who Shot JR? That's
huge.
That's the old pinnacle.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it was a dream, wasn't that?
Did that turn out?
It was Mary Ross. Killed him? It was a specific person who shot him. A minor character. The dream one was like two seasons or later when the season sucked. They made it a dream. Has been used multiple times since.
But the only time, yes, it has been, and there's been two
and
that were
still awful.
There were two that were brilliant.
Which
one is the end of Newhart, where he woke up with Suzanne Plachet.
Yeah, okay, that was brilliant.
Brilliant,
but because Newhart's brilliant.
And the other was the end of St. Elsewhere. If anybody hasn't seen it, it's fantastic. They always open with the exterior of this hospital in Boston, and then the end of the series. I'm just going to wreck it for anybody.
Do it,
go for it. It's 30 years old.
So anyway, you find out that they pulls back, and one of the minor characters in the show was a young autistic kid, and you pull back, and the hospital was in this tiny little snow globe, and the entire
snow globe controversy
segment of this autistic
people were so mad.
I thought it was brilliant,
but people
I
were so mad at the time. That.
Brilliant.
People were mad at the time.
Brilliant. People were really mad at the Sopranos.
Oh my God, I was mad at the Sopranos.
Didn't make any sense. Okay, let's just be clear. The ending of that show made no sense.
They could have done one small change, and it would have been okay.
What would they have done?
They cut to black. They should have faded to black.
Oh, that's all they had the to difference. Do.
Because they cut to black, everyone's like, oh my God, the HBO.
I thought it would
happen.
Yeah.
But if they'd faded to black with the song and everything, you knew what was going to happen.
He knew that
the guys were outside and they were going to get blown up and they were going to die. But if they faded,
no one
would have flipped out that they thought they got screwed on their HBO.
I can tell you.
I thought my cable went out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We were in Brooklyn at the time watching that at a friend's house. And it was one of those things like everybody went home. You either at a bar watching it or you were at home. And the entire neighborhood were screaming obscenities through all of Brooklyn. Like, what the fuck? It was good. Like the ending. I think that was David Chase just going, you know what? I'm just going to do what I want.
What other recommendations do you guys have for TV?
The first season of Ozark was great.
Great.
Unexpected, edgy, true to human nature. but really interesting choices and acting. If you want a feel-good show right now.
Yeah, what would you say?
Ted Lasso.
I've heard about it, but I've not seen it.
Wait a minute, the third person to tell me this.
Ted Lasso is a great show because it takes a fish out of water theme, but doesn't make the show about being fish out of water. The show's really about working together as a team and developing human connections in all these different ways. And they have all these characters that are sharply drawn, some you like, some you don't like. They let them be unlikable. And it's just, it's funny.
An old friend from college is one of the co-creators and acts on it as well, a guy named Brendan Hunt.
He plays the sidekick coach. Yeah. Hilarious.
Okay, that's on our list. And we know what Lori's watching. Lori's watching Cobra Kai.
Oh, no, I just finished it, so I need something new. So this is going to be it.
And how about you, Eve?
You're going to...
We're not going to judge.
Hey, I already talked about Bridgerton. Don't worry.
I love you, Courtney. I can't handle ampere waist dress shows. I like the style I used to wear ampere dresses, but there's something about those types of shows that I stay away from, which is one of the reasons I didn't watch The Crown, because it's just like the historical thing just didn't do. I go for comfort TV. I go for stuff I've probably seen a million times. And we've talked enough about West Wing, but I'm going to drop another one on you. Smash.
Smash was great.
Okay.
What is
Smash? Oh my gosh. So good. They need to bring it back. They need to do a live show.
They need to have it go on tour. It is. So Smash was a 2-season show about a musical inside of a musical. And again, theater, whatever. But it's a thing about Marilyn Monroe, and it's two women who are vying for Marilyn Monroe. And one of them was Catherine McPhee, who was from
Megan Hilty.
So you even had like old theater versus TV, because McPhee came out of American Idol. And they play on some of those themes in ways that was kind of cool. They got some shit wrong about theater, but that's okay. There was something about it. The first season I loved, the second season I hated, and then I went back and I watched it again and again, and I love it again. What draws you to shows these days? Is it because it's there and because you need to fill the space? Are you drawn into topics these days? Is that because of what we grew up with, or nothing connects? It's just like TV is now this random pattern of just shit you watch.
I sort of flip between a lot of documentary kind of things because I can't travel now. So I want to learn something. So Frontline, I love watching Frontline. And anything where I can learn something is interesting to me. I did have a period where I was watching, it was probably like on the Discovery Channel, about like shipwreck disasters. I don't know why I got stuck on it. It was definitely a rabbit hole, but I was just like, oh, I don't know. Maybe my meds were off that week or something. But mostly, I think particularly in the climate that we're in, I just want more information.
So learning versus entertainment.
I mean, yeah, every so often you'll watch something. I love The Mandalorian. Thought it was fantastic. A lot of fun.
I'm looking for escape. It can be serious or funny. But when you see the preview, I don't want to know what the ending is. I don't want to be able to figure it out.
So many shows you can. Like it telegraphs. You're looking like, yeah, I know exactly where this is going.
Right. And so you're like, I don't know, unless there's an actor I really want to see. I'm a history geek. So there's so much stuff I can see on history. And it's interesting to compare European productions or productions versus American productions, because they have a different point of view.
BBC does it better. If you're going to watch something that's interesting and historical, I think that they just do it better.
But also the notion of escape, like anything from like The Mandalorian to something silly, or a cooking show.
Top Chef.
Yeah. But sometimes, well, Top Chef, you know, like it's still a competition. Like sometimes you just want to watch something that's not going to blow up, that's not going to have someone die. That's just like, I can watch this and I'm not going to have my adrenals pump out a lot of cortisol today.
We're in our 50s and we have to keep our shit measured.
What about you, Lori?
I'm all about crime dramas. I think it's the psychology of people. And I know that they're just TV shows, but the thread of what kind of a person does this. And I do watch a lot of that kind of silly stuff. But I, like Chris and even what Courtney was saying, I do like to watch where I'm going to learn something. CNN does a lot of really great, they're little small 1-hour things, but they do these series. Like they were just doing one on First Ladies. And that was super interesting. And they did one on Vice Presidents and the role of a vice president now versus the role of the vice president 100 years ago. So things like that I find interesting. And then sometimes I just want to escape into Cobra Kai.
So here's one last question for you guys. There are some 80s reboots that are happening, 80s and 90s reboots that are in progress. Little House is coming back.
No.
They are making a reboot of Little House. Courtney's like, what the fuck? Why would they do that? They also announced the Sex and the City reboot.
Without Samantha.
That's going to be interesting. So that alone will have me watching.
Because you liked the original series.
Oh, I love the series.
Me too. But now, it didn't age well.
It didn't.
It did not age well.
But now that Kim Cattrall isn't going to be on and that character Samantha is not going to be there, I'm curious how they're going to get around that. Yeah. So that's my nosy bit.
Any other reboots that you've heard of? They're trying to reach our age group these days because now they actually care about us for some stupid reason.
What's Aaron Sorkin working on now? Chris, you probably know this.
I don't. But I'm sure it involves people walking and talking a lot.
Shit, man.
I can say I think that the CBS All Access, I like science fiction. The Picard reboot was very interesting.
Yes.
Fantastic. And they also have another Star Trek one that's very good. And then there's a really funny one, which is called Star Trek Below Decks, which is a cartoon, but it's silly and pokes fun at the entire canon of everything that's in there. It's very, very, very funny.
Okay.
It's well written. The characters are really good. It's all about the dopes who live, you know, down below who are all red shirts who get killed.
I was going to say they're red shirts.
It's really fun. It's silly and dumb. And if you just want to, it would be like the perfect thing to watch on a 14-hour flight, because you can watch a half hour, take a sleep, and it's only a half hour.
And so Chris brings us full circle, because who did we start off talking about? Leonard Nimoy.
That's right.
In Search of.
There you go.
Well done.
Wrap it up any better than that.
Way to go, Chris.
That's awesome. We've covered a lot of ground.
Keep watching TV. It pays my mortgage.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. We're 100% down with that. That's it for us this week. Thank you for listening to Gen X Stories. Drop us a note at hello@GenXStories, and we may do some shout outs on a future episode. You can also subscribe to Gen X Stories on your favorite podcast app. Follow us on Instagram @GenXStories, or just join our growing Facebook group. We all have a Gen X story. What's yours?